All the follow-up with what we're doing in Kansas, so a little bit of a head cold to take, so bear with me. We've discussed this a little bit, but where we're at right now is really just kind of getting our feet wet. We have, you know, been looking at Drake for a number of years. We've been having this all with rail, kind of on the fringe of trucking. It was up a different unit at KDOT. It's been moved down into planning within the last year. This will be our first freight study. And really what we hope to get out of this is really a systems level overview of the extent of performance of the freight transportation system and the commodities that are moving across it, and that would be through originating, terminating, within the state, industry and logistic trends, as well as things change rather quickly in the private sector to meet demand, cost issues, things like that. And, how that affects what's going on in the state and then what we have to do in KDOT to respond to those trends and issues. And really, at the end of the day, which I'm hoping the end of the day is going to be the end of April, if they fall into May, we are having to revisit some of our rail information, our rail data, that when we first looked at it, didn't make sense. And actually Tuesday before we came up, I received a rail agenda. I haven't looked at it. We haven't had a chance to really see, what are the changes have been made and if it now makes sense. But, what we want to do is be able to have, set strategic infrastructure, institutional and policy recommendations. That would be at the unit level, the bureau, the division, and the agency. And integrate freight better into the long-range planning process and, really maximize the benefits of what we're trying to accomplish as we move forward with better addressing freight within Kansas. The one thing that makes us a bit unique, especially in Kansas City, is we have a major freight hub that is being addressed by two different state DOTs in concert with one another, MoDOT and KDOT. On the Kansas side, a lot of freight flows into or through originates in the Kansas City market. We work closely with the folks at MARC. They are doing a freight plan update in conjunction with Kansas City Smart Port, which you'll hear more about that today. But in Kansas, we are very obviously agricultural dependent, whether it be crops, feedlots, processing facilities, fertilizers, things like that. We have a corn work from Kansas City to Topeka, Wichita, which is one of the main corridors in the state. And as you get into the southwest, that's kind of the economy unto itself with agriculture and beef processing. And they have their specific needs out in that part of the state versus, say, the northeast part of the state where we have one of the major metropolitan areas. Freight in general and rail freight were addressed in the Kansas long-range transportation plan update that we did about a year ago. Slowly been rising to the surface. It hasn't been talked about, but it was certainly brought out more when we went through that process in our most recent update. And one of the catalysts, I think, to really bring things forward, why it was the announcement of the BNSF intermodal facility. When they say we're going to have roughly 3,000 trucks going on I-35 on opening day and a full build-out, it's going to be 10,000 that gets people's attention. We have parts of I-35 in Kansas City right now that are already in the 10, 12,000 trucks a day, and that's just going to keep going up. So we have a very specific issue, in this part of the state. But like I said, this is our first great plan of commodities law analysis. it's multi-modal in nature. We are looking at highways, class ones, shorelines. We don't really have a whole lot of air cargo or water, but we did take a look at that. We were looking from an urban perspective as well as a rural perspective. And, one of the things we've done was to map, the transportation networks, key corridors, intermodal facilities, things like that, and how it all works. We touched on this a little bit. Our short line system makes up 41% of our rail network, and we certainly, want to keep that intact. We talked about abandonment and other issues that have happened over the years, and we've seen the same thing in Kansas. But as our short line system exists today, there may be a little snippet here and a little snippet there that if it was abandoned, no major effects. But the bad is out of the system. Once we get beyond that point, then we start having some serious issues. Our short line system last year between all the short line railroads hauled about 175,000 carloads. And, that's 650,000 trucks. So they're a very integral part of the multimodal transportation network in the state, and especially in our ag sectors, moving wheat, especially whether that's staying within the United States or slowing down a lot of times to Texas and the Houston market for export overseas. Our goals for doing a statewide plan was to gain a better understanding of the logistics practices and the supply chains, how things work, why they work the way they do, the decision-making process, gain a better understanding of industry perspectives on, transportation barriers, whether that be, bottlenecks, rail service. We talk about it roundabouts. That's certainly to be an issue. With the wind energy industry and like a lot of the Midwest states, we see a lot of blades and the towers and all the components moving either through Kansas or into Kansas. We've got some wind farms developing out in the central and the western part of the state. Freight flows, like was discussed earlier, you need to know how things are moving, where they're moving, and why they're moving that way. And develop a recommendation for freight transportation policy framework. We kind of got this surrounded, but it's been a bit of a learning process for us as we, move forward to say, okay, we know freight's an issue, and how are we going to incorporate that into our agency as we move forward? To help us have a better handle on that. Look at shortfalls, how do we deal with those, and then performance measures. Once we move forward and we make these decisions, then obviously we need to gauge how we're doing to address those. What we've completed to date, we've done key industry profiles and analysis, growth trends, employment, per capita income, population trends and shifts. We have seen shifts, and we continue to see shifts from the rural parts of the state into the former from Kansas City down to Wichita. You get in the western one-third, or the eastern one-third of the state, that accounts for a pretty large percentage of the population. We've got counties out in western Kansas where the cattle population is, 10 times the human population. That presents some specific issues out there. Looking at the multimodal freight system profile and logistic patterns, and again, we looked at all the different modes. Freight demand analysis, we used a base year of 2006 and an out year of 2030, looking at counts, volume, values, and how all that goes together. We don't have any major congestion issues to speak of. I mean, we do have some bottlenecks, things like that, but it's not reached a point yet where it's totally unmanageable. I think part of the goal is to stay ahead of the curve on this, because we do have the opportunity to be proactive rather than reactive and that's one of our goals, is to better understand and know what's coming, so we're ready to address those needs when they do come up. Key issues and challenges, a lot of similarities in classical rail system capacity constraint and choke points. Kansas City is the second largest rail hub in the U.S. in volume, or the heaviest in tonnage, and that's coal. We have a lot of coal moving through the state. Short line railroad system, we have some rail choke points and switch yards that we were able to this last night. We had a small community in Cherry Hill, Kansas, but not real strong population. I think less than 10,000, probably 2,000, way less. But the South Kansas and Oklahoma Railroad, one of our major short lines, goes through there, and they move about close to 60,000, 55,000, 60,000 carloads a year. And they don't have a switching yard in sight, so they're moving up and down track and making moves. But it splits the town in half. So that presents a lot of issues for emergency service vehicles, traffic flow, schools, things like that. We have applied to the FRA or their rail relocation grant fund to try and move that yard and develop a new yard outside of town, which will certainly help that situation. Wichita, you know, there's certainly some real congestion there. I've seen about 50 trains a day. That's only going to increase. I talked about this earlier, short lines being able to handle the 286s, and in the future, the 315s. Not only on the track infrastructure, but the bridges as well. You know, how do we address that? We have some rail out in the parts of the state that, 75, 80 pound rail. That's 100 years old, it's not a cheap fix. So how do we work towards that goal? Continue to break the truck traffic in urban and rural corridors, bottlenecks, and congestion. We have rural congestion, especially out in the southwest part of the state. If you have a couple of grain trucks with corn and you've got four or five cattle trucks, one after the other, and you have, 6-8 cars behind them, and the lead truck is going 5 miles under the posted speed limit, that slows everything down. And that is an ongoing issue in that part of the state. Riverside is overweight, everybody's dealing with that. We did 116,000 permits last year. We have addressed the permit fee issue, and that's a start. And we will use those proceeds from those increases to improve our systems and services to the trucking industry and, move forward with that. Data sources, pretty standard fare. We use economic data, STD waybill samples, Department of Ag, global websites, internal KDOT data. We did roughly 50 interviews as we went through this process. We held 8 public meetings, and it was twofold. I talked a little bit about the TLIC committee, the Transportation Leveraging Investments in Kansas, which was a task force put together by the governor to go throughout the state and hear from people and try to develop and assess what the next transportation program would look like. And within the TLIC meetings, we heard, about shoreline railroads, we heard about class ones, we heard about oversized overweight, and we heard about freight in general. On the back end of those meetings, we held freight-specific public outreach meetings that was focused strictly on our freight study. It was rather interesting. We had, I think the biggest group we had was 16 or 18, and the smallest group we had was 2 or 3, maybe 4 people. We really got some of the best information out of the small groups that they had to talk, and we got to dive down a little bit deeper and really dig into what they were thinking and what their concerns were. In conjunction with the study, we did a grant advisory committee for the study. I talked a little bit about that yesterday. We you know, had a wide variety of representation, trucking companies and class ones, class threes, port authorities, grain elevators, manufacturers, distribution centers, local governmental partners, the highway patrol, you know, from the enforcement side of things. And that helped us as we went through the study to get their input, their thoughts. Were we on target? Did we miss anything? Did something not make sense? And, you know, that really just allows us to be more thorough in what we do as we work through the process of completing this study. And those folks were more than happy to be involved. You know, I think they thought it was a good deal and appreciated being able to provide input to us. Coordination and cooperation, you know, we have our study that's been going on now for a year. The Mid-America Regional Council launched their freight, local freight study with Smart Port, about 30 days after we started or so. It was just almost, you know, right in line with each other. And we developed a coordinating committee that met on numerous occasions to look at data, share data, interviews, you know, what are we finding out, especially in the Kansas City metro area, so that, you know, if our study was finding one thing, their study was finding another, why was that? Was there a reason that made sense for some of these differences, or was there not? At that point, we could certainly dig into it and, you know, see what the situation was at that time. Wichita will be doing a great study, and we will certainly work with them as they move through that process. It was a rather large group. We had KDOT, MnDOT was involved because of the issues on both sides of the state line and the metro area. Longo was at the table, and then we had our consultants, we had Mark's consultants, and it was very good. Everybody cooperated and shared information, and I think it was very helpful as we went through the process to have that coordination at all different levels. We have done an interim report to the Kansas legislature, really more than an executive summary of the report, just kind of hitting the high points. The reason for this, too, was to tie in with Peeling. Secretary Miller and other folks at KDOT have been making presentations to legislative committees and transportation committees on Peeling findings and really trying to frame what this next transportation program could look like so that in the session next year they can really push forward and try and get the program together. But our input on the freight side works in perfectly with what they have been doing to frame that particular program. And I mentioned the T-Link Committee. They too were a very broad-based group from local governmental agencies and private industry, transportation companies. But their view on committee, and I'll just read this, the T-Link Committee recognizes the importance of freight transportation across all modes, the need for connectivity between modes, and how the state's multimodal transportation network can have a positive effect on economic development opportunities. That helps our cause considerably as we try to move forward with freight, and the economic development tie-in is certainly important. If you're, you know, putting money into a program, there certainly needs to be economic benefits on the back end, whether that be, you know, job creation or new business development, whatever the case might be. With our short line program, they have recommended we go between $3 million and $7 million a year. They certainly see the need out there with the short line system. They did also talk about opening that up a little bit, something that we have to work on internally and how it could work to do a lot of rehab projects, signings, things like that, but to open that up and go into industrial parks, building spurs, you know, things like that to broaden the reach of the program. You know, there's certainly some good points with that. There's some things that we certainly have to take into account. In the history of our loan program, they've never had a default. And, you know, we certainly don't keep it that way. Everybody's, you know, paid their money back. We've had a few folks pay late fees on occasion. But, you know, when you get into new business development, and, you know, here's a plot of ground, we're going to build an industrial park, but we need rental service. And then they take out a loan, you build the infrastructure, and they have trouble filling the park. And, you know, just certain things we have to look at and be comfortable with something of that nature. We held the statewide freight summit back in February. This was really our last public meeting, so to speak. We had it in Topeka, and again, we had a variety of different folks attend. Shippers, transportation companies, MPOs, industrial organizations, state DOTs, LoDOT was in attendance. You know, we had involvement from Kansas Motor Carriers Association, who went through this study, the Kansas Grain Feed Association that represents the elevators throughout the state, who both are key players in what happens out there. We reviewed those study findings and broke into some subgroups and had one last chance to say, okay, let's look at this, let's talk about it. Does it make sense? Have we missed anything? Really that last final opportunity to make sure that we were headed down the right path on this thing. Feedback was overall very positive. Nothing really came out that said, hey, you guys are so on target on this. You need to start over. You know, we didn't have anything like that. And we had some good press coverage, newspapers, TV stations, radio stations, which, you know, it was kind of nice to, you know, get that kind of coverage for the freight cause. Where do we go from here? You know, and I think this is probably common to everybody in the room. Increased freight planning, you know, do more, better understanding of why things work the way they do in the different modes, and why businesses do things the way they do and how they utilize the systems. Increasing incorporation of freight needs into the agency decision-making process, whether that be planning, whether that be in design, you know, across different bureaus. We have started making strides already with that, with our lay station analysis. Teresa pointed out some of it where design is getting very heavily involved, and that is a good thing. We will form a freight advisory committee to provide us with guidance. I don't see that as, you know, branding projects, things like that, but to help us in what we do to make better decisions and how it works between the public and the private sectors. Continue to address oversized, overweight vehicles, you know, our permitting and routing systems. We work very closely with Revenue, Highway Control, Kansas Corporation Commission. I mentioned that yesterday the Kansas Trucking Connection was formed about 4 years ago. It's kind of a one-stop shop, easy to use. Sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's not. So our goal is to certainly improve what we're doing through technology to make it easier for those folks out there that are getting permits to move freight through the state. Update our state rail plan. That RFP will go out next week, so we're going to get moving on that right away. The way station study, I'm hoping, will be done here in a couple months. And then also form a rail advisory committee, kind of a subgroup off of the freight, and really drill down and try and get to the root of some of these rail-specific issues and what we need to do as we continue to move forward with rural transportation. And I think I have covered everything. Questions and answers.
Yes?
Comments, questions, or... Can you talk a little bit more about how you address oversight?
Yes.
Right now, super lows are really quite a big deal. We had about 4,500 last year, and that work goes through our bridge folks where they do bridge analysis, low limits and things like that. But you know what we look at and what's been formulating in my mind for a while is, looking at these corridors and are we starting to see specific corridors that see more and more of the oversized loads, the super loads, because they can't go this way because of two or three bridges, and they can't go this way for another reason. And because of different system issues, they're almost getting funneled into specific corridors. And is there a way to get away from that and try to distribute it out where it's not, all going over the same route time after time after time, and help with the preservation of the system. The wind energy is certainly an issue, and we've had some trucks go in ditches. I don't know if we've had any actually spill over because of geometrics of the highway. We've had that issue come up several times, that this is the route you have to go because of this, because of this, because of this, and then the geometrics present a problem, and going through this turn, and it's all over. So, I think this study that we're doing is bringing out the fact that we need to drill down into the oversized overweight issue even more than we already have, and get a better understanding of that particular issue. We've kind of learned over the past year, everything moved down with planning, so we've gone through a bit of a learning curve, but this, like I said, this study has brought to light the fact that I think there's really more to look at and understand at a deeper level on oversized overweight issues, not only now, but in the future.
I'm curious about how you're incorporating the results of your planning efforts into your agency operations. In my 35 years of doing transportation stuff, I've seen an awful lot of plans that ended up being good takeaways. And I think it's real.
Well, what we're doing, our plan's not done yet. But, the Bridge Planning Way Station study and other things that are ongoing, I'm selling.
Okay.
I have a salesman. This is Frank, it's important to us. Here's why it needs to be important in design, it needs to be important for administration, it needs to be important for, whatever. We're selling something that is important, and we need to sell that importance to the rest of the agency. We've already started that process in keeping other bureaus and other units involved in the process, whether it be from an advisory capacity or on the way station study. We've reached the point where in Johnson County, in relation to the new BNSF facility, two recommended locations to move the existing facilities. The existing facilities are outdated and can't handle the current traffic, and they certainly will not be able to handle the traffic in 2030. So once we reach that phase, we will have the guys from design and got their input, and does this make sense to you? And, it's a good thing we did because we said, we need to think about this, and I'm not sure we would do it exactly this way. So the next phase, if you will, now that we have these locations determined, will be essentially to hand it off to design, and then we would have a seat at the table, just kind of in reverse order. We work closely with our statewide planning unit. We work closely with our NPO units. We've worked to educate folks at KDOT on freight issues and freight needs and why it's important. From the bureau chief level to the division director, deputy secretary, Secretary Miller, so that they are, they get it. And that was one of the goals. If they don't get it, you're not going to make much progress. And the way that they get it is through education and so on. We're marketing this, but here's what you need to do.
A couple ways. One, the project selection category freight is one of the major factors now, never was previously. I was also able to, maybe this is double voting, able to get our Indiana Economic Development Corporation, they also now vote on projects. So they're heavily, obviously, manufacturing and logistics, so we kind of get a double vote that way. I vote and they vote. So we're making up for lost time. And then the information contained out of the freight plan goes into our long-range plan for overall transportation. It's incorporated in there as well.
Okay.
We're approaching it from two parts as far as integrating it. We are just finishing up our state transportation plan. We actually included freight issues and freight findings in a major part of our mobility and especially interstate commerce statements in the state transportation plan that we never had before this was all passenger travel and we were hiring hard. The other thing that we're doing is because of our regional freight studies and the fact that we're putting it in front of people, we now have at the district level, in our districts, usually the assistant district engineer or the manager of planning is now a freight specialist and is looking at completed freight issues. We have incorporated them on our study teams. We have them help with the interviews. In fact, some local interviews after they've been through what we call our Tier 1 interview, our intensive consultant staff face-to-face interview. They take the same study tool to do some localized, smaller interviews with people they feel I have a voice in. So we're getting them involved. Beyond that, with our freight advisory committee, and with these local contacts we're making with the industry, we are getting to the point where freight is being talked about much more. And we're educating the legislators as we go on, including county board members, state legislators, state senators, and even our congressional delegation. They've been invited to our open houses and our workshops, even some of our interviews, so that they get educated as well. The last step is that we are breaking down silos between state agencies. For the first time, we invited in the Agricultural Department, Department of Natural Resources, Economic Development, and Employment, and PCA, the environmental folks. They all have been part of our steering committees and part of our outreach groups and workshops. So all of a sudden, they have input, they have a voice, and they're getting involved with freight. And they're starting to see how all this ties together. That's kind of
yes. I've got two questions.
Sure.
One is, as part of your plans, can you identify and prioritize a list of standalone freight projects?
Short answer is yes. That is our intent in all these plans on the local level, is to have a full list of specific projects, not just general group and policy recommendations.
Any other?
We don't have project specific, but what we have really are modes and corridors and points of choke points. We can say the rail switching yard in Wichita is an issue and it needs to be fixed, but that takes a pretty broad area, and we know in our minds here might be a couple of options that would help alleviate that situation, but we haven't gone so far as to say, and this is the recommendation we're going to put forth, because there are certainly things that would have to be looked at and studied
along the lines of making that final decision to, you know, make that recommendation.
It is
an overall plan with some broad recommendations.
We have great coordinators, state great coordinators, as well as the federal government. Do you guys offer, do each of your states have, and the other states of the Thomas, that's about great coordinators, have you identified great champions in the state of Minnesota, in the state of Indiana, in the state of Kansas?
Outside of the agency.
Or within, or it could be within, it could be outside, but it is, it's up here. It's up here, and that's a champion. Champion, a great coordinator, maybe the end of the afternoon. Pretty critical.
Within the agency, we have several great champions. Our division director certainly understands it. Our division director gets this. Secretary Miller gets this. She understands it. Outside of the agency, we have some specific champions for specific modes. We certainly do on the short line, railroad side of things. On the others, we certainly have folks that, while it may not be a champion on point, if we were to call and say, hey, can you come in for a meeting with whoever and discuss this, they certainly would. From a great perspective of why it's important in general to me, specifically their particular industry or their mode of transportation. We have pretty good relationships with the different modes, the different industry organizations across the state. I don't know if they're champions on point, but they certainly understand it and will champion the cause.
You can't really identify by position somebody that's going to be a great champion. It really varies. Every state's different. Every state DOT CEO is really different. As much as I've found out with dealing with the I-70 corridor, extremely different. Don't really have one for St. Indiana. Probably the best one I've got is our governor. He really gets manufacturing, advanced manufacturing and logistics, and he sees it as one mutually supporting industry, all those two industries. And he's identified it as one of the top four or five pillar industries for our state. Beyond that, I don't have a whole lot of help in that area. Ironically, I have two people out in the private sector, both the CEOs. One is now moved over to the Secretary of Education in the state. She gets it because it deals with workforce development and those type of issues and logistics and advanced manufacturing. She gets it, and I use her quite often as one of my higher level champions. So you never know where they're going to come from. You really don't.
We've got some similar experience. Most of our champions are outside of the department, if not virtually all of them. We have several CEOs, members of the Minnesota Trade Advisory Committee, a few key politicians, past and present, some state legislators, some county board commissioners that are running the larger circles in just their counties. Jim Oberstar, I think you all know, has an interest in freight. Evidenced by his, waterways bill last year and his push for transportation and rail initiatives. So that cuts both ways. If you have a champion, you better do your job well. But if you do, it bears fruit.
We have a formal process on project selection. It's very regimented. We've got some factors for freight selection, dealing with the number of commercial vehicles, BNC
particular routes. Obviously, they're more for, they're not freight projects, they're just more freight-centric projects. Okay? It's kind of, you never have an exclusive freight project. They're all shared. Some are just more shared than others. And so, but it's looked at and factored in on every major project.
So
it's DMT, it's right. That's one of the few objective measurements that you can, you know, that you can look at.
So. We look at DMT and truck counts on the highways. Our top-tier state network for truck routes is 650 heavy commercial vehicles a day. And above. And that's kind of our threshold. And we have it in the lower tiers as well, all the way down to the county road level, down to the 50 trucks a day. That's good for, that's an easy metric. The downside is that's formula driven because we don't have really good traffic counts, real, actual traffic counts on most of those roadways. We also look at cost effectiveness. If we have a port project, if we have a rail project, now we look at, for a rail loan, for instance, whether or not the loan came back, but just who is benefiting and what the dollar per dollar outturn is going to be back into the economy, especially with port projects that applies. And then in order to do that, we get economic development involved, both local chapters and the state agency, in helping to estimate what that might be. So we'll look at employment, we'll look at dollars of gross domestic product and business development tax levels, tax revenue for the local and state level government units. That plays an important part. You didn't have railroads out there, for instance. A lot of those small towns would die just for, because railroad running through town is a major source of property tax revenue for them. Something that's often overlooked.
On the highway side, we look at truck counts as we look at days on that. On the rail side, we do an analysis that looks at carloads, estimated future carloads, the project itself, the cost of the project, transportation costs. If there was to be a little shift, this project didn't happen, what effect would that have on the price of grain? When the shipper gets paid, transportation costs, what is the full impact on that? In some instances, what happens if the sign is abandoned? Six, 7, 8, 10 years ago, there were some lines that we did projects on that weren't made for yet projects. But they just weren't. We weren't putting in 1,000 miles. We were putting in 400. But at the end of the day, the analysis and what happens if this line goes away because they were in that position. If they didn't get it back up to minimum standards, line might not have been there.
So tell me, are these new classes? I mean, if
there
are, how are you using these?
We've been using these for some time. I think it has, we've been forward something we heard at SkiLink and other discussions. Will be more of an economic impact analysis overall. And once you start getting into economic impact analysis, then I think that drives more into freight costs. That if we do this, we may have this business located here, or this manufacturer, or this particular company is going to expand, it's going to create new jobs. But for that to happen, they've got to have efficient flow in of raw materials and efficient flow of the finished product out. So we're moving that direction. It's been a positive conversation in a lot of our meetings that we've had throughout the state, and we just have to continue to drill down and try and figure all that out.
Yeah, I think prior to my arrival was considered, but not strongly. They just looked exclusively at that commercial vehicle count, and that was it. When I come in and I sit at the table, I know that, but I know where all these industries are located. I know how they're trending in a lot of cases. Is this industry expanding? Is it contracting? I deal with a lot of the developers on
their plans for new distribution centers, where they're putting those in, where some of where automotive plants are thinking about expanding, where we're putting in new ethanol facilities, all sorts of stuff. So a lot of that stuff, I kind of look into the crystal ball a little bit, look at 5 to 10 years on what I know is coming in. Current data just can't show you. You know, they can't show you. You know, as we did one interchange at Terre Haute on I-70, you know, it's a major city, but I do international paper, had a plant right on the Wabash River and uses that quite a bit. And they didn't have a factor, you know, in on that, unfortunately. I use that leaving. But it's a great interchange. And another thing that has changed is that, you know, I've got the Indiana Economic Development Corporation now coming in, and they also get a vote. Because they're working with the investors in the state, and those projects they see as a total economic development. You know, I'm looking at freight mobility, I'm looking at freight safety and all those things. They're looking at the overall economic development aspect. And they've got about 7 or 8 criteria. It's subjective, but we've got them at the table, and that helps. And then if it's something particular of a certain project, I've got Department of Ag coming in. If it's an ethanol facility, some other things. So,
now we, our measures, up to a year ago, were the metrics on our interregional corridor system, the IRC system, which is itself only about 8 years old as a designated network. The only metric on that system was free flow of travel speed, a lousy measure for rural transportation and long-haul trucking, and it doesn't talk about other loads or anything else. So, might as well forget it. So, get into the metro area where you actually got congestion on the roadways, and inside the metro area, they don't measure. So, it's useless measure. When we sat down, for the first time, we actually mapped and put on a GIS layer the traffic volumes for heavy commercial vehicles. We hadn't done that about 6 months ago. And we incorporated that in as a dense of the state transportation plan. We mapped for the first time not only the rail system, but the ownership, subsidiary ownership, and the speed and frequency of trains on every line of the state. We hadn't done that before. Now we have a big time for that. And we're looking especially at our short lines as well as some of our low frequency mainline size runways as being candidates for improvement and measuring, you know, what their MRA speed status will improve with a certain investment of dollars. For instance, we've got two short lines running all the way across the state that are traveling below the 10 mile per hour limit out of necessity. That for, you know, a few $100,000 a mile, they can bring them off to 25 mile per hour standard. Major difference. How do you measure that? One, take a break. Is the line going to be there or is it not? Survivability. But then after that, once you get it up to a reasonable speed, what kind of car loading do you add to it? What kind of economic development do the towns on that route? So we're very much developing this as we go along, and it's only been a very short time frame since we started looking at it.
I think we're going to bring this to a close now because there's one quick question. Okay, great, great.
When you have public data and purchased commercial data, don't hang your hat on it, because it is statistically driven. The Wayville sample is small sample. Review data is, you know, 3% sample of all commercial freight movement. It doesn't capture contracted freight and privately operated freight movements. Global Insights claims to factor that in, but where they should have factored it in by a chance, including theirs. So you have to get down and really with what your businesses are doing in your state at county level, at city level. Employ the NGOs, employ local engineers, employ local chamber of commerce. Exactly that.
Yeah, you want to engage all the stakeholders that have a possible benefit in this solution. Carriers, shippers, 3PLs, associations, whatever. Get them all engaged, make sure they know what's going on. You generally have good consultants that do these and do your own homework. Do some of your own independent research, some of your own independent homework. Okay? And that's it. Do some of your own work. Don't trust everything you read. Do some sanity checks. Be objective as much as you can.
Mark is here and Cambridge of Management show up, so it's okay.
So, when they're done, the clock strikes at 12 and they hand it over to you. They leave town, but it's your plan. Do some of your own work.
Real quick.
I agree, and first-hand experience, when I go to our rail data, once we receive that, it took us about not more than 5 seconds to say this is not right. And had a reason. You use that, but I guess use it cautiously, that's where the interviews come into play. You get out there in front of these folks, and you can get some numbers from them, but what's more important is the story besides the numbers.
And you need to go out and help trucks and walk
them back. And I'm doing the same thing on the I-70 dedicated truck lines. I've already driven the route 4 times.
Okay.
It's 800 miles.
Okay.
Fortunately, I got reasons to go where I go. I don't just get out here and collect bugs on the windshield. But you've got to get out there, you've got to talk to the trucking firms, understand what their feelings are, what their needs are, and what value they're going to benefit. And so I do have the I-70. The consultants will speak more for me than they ever have from anybody else. Doctor,
I have a comment there that you were commenting a couple of times, the transport of these wind turbines and then that power plant pump. We have an ongoing study of the Iowa DOT.
Ever done, right?
We're done.